Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Today we have Carla Barrows. And Carla is going to tell her story. It's a great story. And I don't want to give it away, but she is a former attorney. And now she's a marriage and family therapist. So Carla is going to tell us all about her life and how she got into that. And welcome, Carla.
Hey there, Hillary. Hi.
It's great to see you.
You too. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I think you had a little bit of an interesting childhood with your parents. If you want to talk about a little bit that and then how you got into being a lawyer and then, you know, we'll go from there to the therapist.
Yeah, that's interesting. It all, I guess, in some ways can come back to childhood. I was the third of four children, two older sisters a year each ahead of me, and then a younger brother 9 years. And I would say my mother's from Nicaragua. My father was a Marine who was working in the embassy there. They met and came back to the States. And we say, you know, we grew up in what we'd say lower Alabama, right? Northern Florida in the panhandle. So very different cultural mix there. And to say that my parents' relationship had its moments of turbulence might be an understatement. Gruff Marine. My dad had a very difficult childhood, poverty, strict parents, in the day when kids were kind of free child labor, if you will. And I think he escaped into the Marines and met my mother, who had been a very cultivated person. So I'm sure it was a great culture shock. But the bottom line was, I kind of saw it as oil and water, you know, growing up. And I wish it would have been that nice. It could be gruff. He could be a yeller screamer. There could be plates thrown at times, kids hiding, you know, feeling like he was not knowing how he was going to be. Alcohol might have fueled anger, and my mother's sort of petulance, sort of following him, pursuing him, could only escalate things. And so, really growing up in this sense of I got to get the heck out of here, right? Like, I didn't see the environment as being one that I wanted to stay in for a long time. But they did their job well. They were great, in terms of providing, and they were really good in terms of being able to educate us. But it really was difficult being in a relationship with them where it was constant fighting and really what it would do to my nervous system when I think about it. So, you know, the story is that after that, they stuck together, right? And that wasn't easy either. I mean, when I was born, apparently my father had been having an affair, right? So, and there's a myth that we have another sister out there, you know, and if you are out there and you know, really, we've talked yeah. about this and we'd be absolutely welcome to hear from you. Okay. No one should be left out or feel alone. None of us she wouldn't have been responsible for that, nor were we. But, when at that time they were very young, my parents, and my father was overwhelmed with the number of kids and just not really settled into life. And, we could feel it. So as they grew up,
did he stick with the Marines or did he get like a different job in lower Alabama?
Yeah. Well, they ended up moving right from North Florida to Southern, it's more like mid Florida, Fort Pierce, Florida. And he was a fireman for many, many years and an accomplished one. You know, he became the captain of the fire department. And after Three Mile Island, after the nuclear fire became an area of specialty, and he ended up retiring from Florida Power and Light many years later as a manager. But they had a rocky relationship throughout. My dad was a golfer, a bit of a gambler, a bit of a drinker, maybe a bit more than a drinker. And my mother carried us a lot of the way. My vision of her was that it was submissive. I viewed that as being somebody that was too conciliatory. I tended to want to identify with my dad, like, you know, who doesn't want to have the power around? But they made it, you know, and I would say that it was commitment to family, not necessarily to each other, that had them through thick and thin, make it for 33 years. And after 33 years, neither of them were college graduates. And all of, except my second sister did not graduate college, but the rest of us did. And, you know, they're proud of each and every one of us. But it was really that time where my mother had just retired, and she had actually reintroduced my father to someone that they knew from his childhood. And he ended up going away with that woman and marrying her.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did your mom retire from? What did she do?
She was a banker for many years. And so she retired from banking. But then once the divorce occurred, she was there like, what am I going to do now? She was in a different financial situation. She was not expecting that at all. And she ended up getting one of the best jobs of her life. She ended up going into translating. So she worked in the court system as a translator for, my gosh, from the time she was about 60 something till we joke, I think she may have retired at 79. She was probably still taking a couple of cases on the side. Yeah. Yeah. And my dad, yeah, he went off. He ended up moving to the Georgia area, and he was married for a bit, but that relationship didn't work out. And the good news from there was that he went into recovery. And I would call it like both alcohol recovery and spiritual recovery. And during those years, I think he really saw that how he had not had the tools he needed as he grew up, and that he didn't really do the family right because of that. And it was important to him to make amends. So he eventually made his way back down from Georgia to Fort Pierce, Florida. And my brother at the time had a son who was on the autistic scale. And my dad needed a place to stay. He was, not doing well financially. We said, all right. But he ended up living with my mom. So here they are. They got divorced after 33 years. And eventually they're going to make their way living together again in order to be able to help my brother. Right. But the joke is, and how it kind of all ties into what we'll talk about a little bit later, is, you know, for years when they were fighting and arguing with each other, I would just say, why don't you get divorced? Right. Like, why put us through this? Just get divorced. But that wasn't in the cards. Not until, after 33 years of marriage. And I'm the one that went into therapy. Right. No one else. I'm the one that goes into therapy. So and
you mean as a patient or as a your work as a patient?
No, not at that time. So what happened was, backing up a bit, as I'm growing up and all I can think of is getting out of the house, I go off to New Orleans, go to school there.
For college.
I had given up a scholarship because I wanted to go to New Orleans. That was the place to go. So I went and, I studied there. I was a communication major. I wanted to be Barbara Walters. I wanted to do what you're doing now, right? And I dated a lawyer. He was a little bit older than me. And he and my mom were like, what do you mean? Who, what, where, when, how, why? You know, those are what reporters ask. Those are the same questions lawyers ask. Hmm. You know, why not be a lawyer and make more money? And so that's what I did. I went to law school. I was scared. I was petrified. I was a good student. I had been the valedictorian of my high school class and, I don't know, magna cum laude at Loyola. But I had seen this movie, Paper Chase, where they tell you, you know, one person on either side of you sitting near you is going to be out. And I thought it was going to be me. And I was just that all I could do was just hit the books. So I was a lawyer at that time, you know, but a small town girl going to the field of law. And as luck would have it, I worked for one of the largest at the time law firms, a very reputable firm, Greenberg Traurig. It's now much larger than it was then. That was 1989. And that's really where, go ahead.
Where was that? What did you stay in?
Miami, Florida. I had gone to school for law school at the University of Florida, graduated, and got a job with Greenberg Traurig, and excelled there, but was scared again, just scared. Felt like a fish out of water. A small town girl from Fort Pierce, Florida, a very small, you know, Catholic high school, Catholic university. And so I found myself amid a number of premier attorneys who were Harvard graduates and Princeton graduates and Yale graduates. And I just had this story in my mind that I don't know how I got in here, right? Like the moment they find out, like I'm in trouble, right? That was kind of my shtick. So I was constantly working hard, right, to compensate. And by the same token, felt myself hiding. And when my parents divorced, I must have been around 29 years old. And it was just one of those, you know, stretches. You're not a kid anymore. You know, I don't get to be just a smart young woman, right? Now it's like, how are you doing in your field? And that shaking up of the family surprised me a lot, right? It was like a secure base that just kind of got ripped out from under me. And I was worried. I was worried for my mother. How was she going to do it financially? We were pissed off at my dad, you know, how the hell could he do this after so many years? But through some development work, the Landmark Forum, I took the Landmark Forum. And one of the things that they have you do in the program is to clean up incomplete communications. And that was with my father. And so I actually, on a break, it had been a few years at least after they divorced, that I called him and said, you know, you'll always be dad. You're always going to be my father. I don't like what happened. I don't like what you've done. But I can also see your point. You guys really didn't get along before. So I accept it. And that sort of began, I think, the communications that ultimately, when their marriage failed, that was able for him to be able to come back into the graces of the family, right? So I really do, I'm really thankful for the Landmark Forum for that opportunity to let me let go of what was really a kind of a family cultural conversation over dad did us wrong, you know, to he's the only dad we're going to have. We remembered that those conflicts were also about him not getting what he wanted. And somebody took the brave move of doing the, you know, unspeakable, right? Leaving. And then that created the turmoil, but we pulled it together ultimately. And that's really my story here, right? Is that, we don't know what tomorrow brings. And if we can stay open to creation, right, lots of things that we didn't think would be possible are. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Did your siblings do any of that work and get complete with your dad too? Or did you just do it and they all kind of...
Yeah, we were in different places, and at the time they haven't. My brother did do the Landmark Forum. My sisters have not. My eldest sister is very involved in her church, and that is really like her basis for spiritual development. And my middle sister didn't, but they I would say that they're kind of engaged in open ways of thinking. They we all grew up Catholic, and you know, forgiveness is a large part of that. Mm-hmm. And I think we always understood that we really loved our mom and we really loved our father, but we just didn't think they made a good couple, right? The match wasn't one made in heaven necessarily. Great parents, you know, they each loved us and supported us, but together it was combustible.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So you cleaned it up with your father. You were about 29, you said, when they got divorced. Were 29 when they got divorced. And then when did you clean it up? Like right after that, or?
It wasn't right after. Let's see. That would have been, it would have been several years later. Okay. I think I took the landmark form in 2001. So it may have been like 7 years then. I mean, by the time the divorce was final, it may have been a couple, you know, 2001.
Right.
You know, it's hard for me to remember, but it was a period of several years between the split, them getting divorced, our not speaking, and then reuniting.
Okay. And so you were still being a lawyer. Did the landmark forum help you at all with that and the fear and being afraid?
It's interesting. I would say, of course, but in the way of I had to start taking responsibility for it wasn't the culture of law or lawyering that was holding me back. It was my story that I didn't fit in. Right. And my story that I was not good enough or that I didn't know how. And so it was I would say that I learned to see that who I am is someone that thrives in community. And I just put my focus on trying to be more of service to people. Right. Like I didn't think I was the smartest one in the room. I didn't think that I was the one that could be the toughest or go for the jugular or that, you know, I had some brilliance that could see the only strategy to win. I felt like was a good, solid, intelligent, hardworking team member. I had the mettle, I think, to kind of speak up if I thought something could be done differently. And then I just wanted to be around people, you know, I could be a jokester a bit. And I was the one who I think in some ways broke rules in the sense that, I recall we used to have different tiers of compensation. You would be bonus based on how many billable hours you had. And my colleagues would typically always go for the highest level. And I didn't. I went for the middle. You know, I was like, I wanted to go out and run. I used to go to the theater. You know, so for me, it was always, as I look back now, maybe looking for a middle path. Yeah. You know, just like I like to work hard, but play hard. Yeah. Is what I would say. The other thing that I see and I can attribute to the developmental work was that I found that in the law firms where I was working, if I wasn't being recognized, one place where I would be is if I did service in service organizations. So I volunteered. I volunteered with an organization called Results. That was to end hunger and poverty. It was a offshoot of the Hunger Project, mm-hmm. and ended up lobbying with Results for more than 20 years. I served, ultimately ended up on their board of directors, and that was I had to run three. I ran three times to get there, and and each time learning more, I could see I didn't have the cachet or I didn't have the resume at the time. To be elected. And I worked toward that, making presentations on radio, writing letters to the editor. I've been published op-eds on hunger and poverty. And so it was that kind of work, right? That work, the uncompensated work, the service work. Mm-hmm. I felt like we learned to do 60-second elevator speeches, right? What you might call the vivid share. And so if you don't think that makes you a better lawyer, right, in response to a judge, it did. And also there was so much the appreciation, right? Because people were being helped that otherwise wouldn't be. And so that was the part that could warm my soul. That was the part that gave me confidence that even if I wasn't in the uber rational world, you know, the biggest shining star, that I felt at home and with family and community in my service world. So there was results, and I served with legal service organization. And over those 25 plus years of practicing law, served on the boards and worked with as a mentor for teens. So I had a young woman who was the survivor of abuse and who left her home country of Honduras, had one of those treacherous 2-year travel stints to the U.S. And when she eventually was granted asylum here, she went into foster care. And she and I met, and we were together for 4 years, and it was lovely. She was she and I still keep in touch. She's married now with 2 kids and lives in the North Carolina area. And so with all of those in those areas, that's where I felt that I was human. That's where I felt like my humanity was nurtured. And that gave me that confidence. I was in community. People knew me. I was appreciated. And that's the kind of stuff that had me boost my own esteem, right, in as being a lawyer.
Wow. Okay. So. Now I see you as, you know, you were the valedictorian, weren't you the homecoming queen?
I was.
And so
I had a great year that year. I was also the gingham girl. And I don't know if you know what gingham is, right? Like that checkered,
yeah.
You know, the milk dairy, princess, right? With the bonnet and everything.
Oh yes. My God.
Now
I know it doesn't matter, but to me, like you were the best. You were at the top. Now I know it's different. Then you go to college and then you're with a whole bunch of tops. And then especially law school is probably, so is that why, you know, even though you were the top at home, you felt that you weren't.
I think so. I think there was that part of hiding my parents were not professionals like that, you know, that they weren't lawyers or judges, that they didn't have college degrees, that, you know, I didn't know a lot about theater, and I didn't know, you know, about some of the cultural aspects of life that I would later learn as an attorney. I may not have been as well read and certainly hadn't traveled the world, right? Sure, I guess I'd been to Nicaragua, but I don't know that I'd been anywhere else out of the country. And so I think it was that, and also like that I had studied communication, but also was an English major, right? I studied at Loyola University, where it's very philosophical, and it's actually based a lot on inquiry, right? So we'd have to take interesting courses like the philosophy of law or the psychology of religion. And so I would be more of the bent that there was how interesting I'd be curious about things. It was the 80s. It was with a lot of the civil wars in Latin America. And so I became closer again with my roots at that time. I did not speak Spanish at that time. When we when my father and mother came to the States from Nicaragua, my mother adopted an English only attitude. And so, you know, I got curious again in college about speaking Spanish. But I didn't speak Spanish until many, many years later. And I think that at the law firms, I think that it was just that people seemed so confident and so assured, you know, and they had the answers, and they could be, you know, they were so perfectionistic. And, you know, for me, it was like, when are we going to get out of here and play? You know, like, when do I get to go home and go for a run? And it's interesting, too, one thing that we've seen lately in some studies regarding the attorney field is that in most professions, pessimism is you know, it's not helpful in a career. And yet in the law, it is. It's like privileged, okay? And so you're in a situation as a litigator, right? The framework is someone wins and someone loses. Even though like 99% of the time cases settle, right? On some sort of an agreed upon terms. But from the get-go, it's like us and them. And there could be everything from like, I'm a friendly person. Don't be too friendly, right? There could be, like wondering if you have the right position. Don't wonder. This is it. This is it, right? Wow. We've got the answer here. And you're trying to learn and grow and assert yourself and, you know, discern, have discernment. But if you've got clients and they may be ones that another partner brought in, that doesn't matter. You know, again, it's about there's a certain frame within which you got to go for the jugular. And it wasn't always like that. So I don't want to like exaggerate, but I really did feel that it was something where everybody was so cautious and where everything needed to be so perfect and where, and there was also a lot of, I felt like we trafficked in insults. You know, it wasn't just that the other side, you know, had a poor argument or that they hadn't thought something through. It was that they were disingenuous. I was like the word I hear all that they're disingenuous, right? Or opposing counsel telling me she doesn't know what she's doing. You know, like I can't tell you how many times she's misconstrued something. And it's constant undermining.
Who were they talking about? They were talking about the lawyers.
Yeah, lawyers would talk about lawyers that way. Talk about lawyers even. They would joke if someone in the firm didn't catch on to something. There would be jokes about the opposing counsel. There was just this way where I always kind of felt like, you know, don't be the one that leaves the room.
Right.
I didn't.
Like my sorority. We didn't.
I got
we knew it. If we left, we'd be the one talked about.
I got that. Yeah. And so there was the way that, the other thing was the power dynamic. I was at that time, I was 89, and certainly there were many women in the field and thank God, upon the shoulders of the women before us. But it was still a time where, I'd be the only woman in a law firm luncheon. I would be the only woman in a deposition room. I could be the only woman at a mediation table. And I think that's changed. I think that, and certainly there are, but women still don't have not risen to the level of power, that men have. And so it goes back to that dominance and submission around like my family life, right? Where, it was mostly, top notch, sharp, diehard, take no prisoners kind of attorneys that I might be working for. And I felt that I was sensitive, right? I felt that maybe from all that fighting that I was part of, or witnessed as a young child, that if people said harsh things, like, it hurt some. And so I could internalize it and personalize it. I hadn't really done all my work yet, right? But that was hard for me, really hard.
Was it mostly men? I mean, you're saying you're the only woman. How many women were at the firm? I mean, you haven't mentioned that you were, that it was men versus you yet. So was that all the time or just happened to be in those particular cases? Like I could see feeling inferior, especially, their game is different than women sometimes.
Well, so it seemed, right? It
but
depended. Like in the larger law firms, you would have, I certainly had other women on the team, brilliant women. One of my very good friends, an excellent, nationally acclaimed attorney. But there would be more attrition of women. They might get married and have children and leave. But when I was in mediums to smaller firms, I might be, let's say if there were 12 attorneys, there might be 3 women. But then if it was a luncheon meeting, not everybody would be there. You might be the only woman. So it wasn't unusual to be an only or the minority voice, if you will. And I think that it was a time when there was, when I started, right, when it was more rule oriented and hierarchical. I think in time, I think, you know, in the more recent times that there's, especially while they've looked at attorney well-being, right, and how lawyers are one of the ones that have the highest suicide rate, highest alcohol use rate, you know, rates of divorce are, you know, out of, you know, is as well very high. And so, you know, you can see it's just a, it's tense. It's a lot of stress. And now I think that the industry is beginning to respond to that. And I inject myself in there as well. And want lawyers to have a sense, as I did eventually, right, that we are capable of many things. We have many talents and we can serve the world in many ways. And that the system of hierarchy versus collaboration, you know, and fighting to the end versus alternative dispute resolutions and collaborative divorces. A lot more things are coming out, I think, to make it a more civil world, or at least that's the hope.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we are going to get the rest of the story when we come back from the commercial break. Thank you for bringing us to this exciting point, and we'll be right back.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your classroom or to your teams and business, go to KikoriApp.com and schedule an appointment. It will change your world. And as always, if you feel like you don't speak up and you'd like to be freer, go to RealTalkWithHillary.com. And schedule a time to chat and let's get you free. And welcome back, Carla Barrow. All right. So, in case people don't realize, with all the stress and all the worry, you did spend 27 years as a lawyer. So, yeah. God bless you. It seems like, now this is my interpretation, I might be wrong, that your other work with results and with the legal service, you know, fostering, mentoring, kept you sane. You know, that was like your go-to while you kept going and kept getting your salary and stuff like that. Would you say that's right? And that's how you made it through so many years? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, definitely that was a part of it. Like the part that would feed me that and give me nutrients of, you know, joy, participation, camaraderie, service. But I really wouldn't have made it without therapy, right? Okay. I mean, like, part of it was dealing, you know, I went to therapy after my parents divorced, you know, as a young attorney. And I worked through over, several years, everything from understanding how it was that I saw identifying with the aggressor as a strategy that was better than being submissive. Wow. But I wasn't comfortable fully in that role, right? I mean, I'm actually a sensitive, sweet person. I want to be friendly. You know, I want to know people. I want to hear your story. I want to hang out, right? And so it was that balance between like the masculine, feminine that to be worked on. I needed to see that I had also been somewhat internalizing too much about taking care of my parents. You know, I was an adult now and they're adults and I didn't have to make them happy. You know, I became a lawyer because my mother and my, you know, older boyfriend thought that was a better role for me. And it was a terrific role. They made a good choice for me, but, right. But it was just something where I could see that I could be easily influenced. And I also saw in this, another thing I dealt with was, the power and attraction, if you will, of narcissism, right? I mean, like many, many, very, stellar and charming attorneys, right, could also have a pull of their ego coming in the room before anyone else. I recall working on a case and getting a very good result. And one of the experts who was an accountant noticed that one of the partners with whom I worked didn't introduce me to certain people when we got in an elevator. And then I had noticed that there would be times where they would have relationships with other prominent attorneys or a judge or something, and they didn't go out of their way to introduce me. And I'm a person who believes in introductions. I believe in invitations. I believe in people being apart. I think connecting is the way that we support each other, and who you know in that realm was so important. And so it was things like that, noticing where I was giving up of myself and then complaining and then realizing that the other person, you know, they hadn't been challenged. I hadn't been doing it my way. So between therapy, you know, getting me to see that nobody was going to tell me to leave my desk at a particular hour, that was up to me. Nobody was going to tell me that I could block them from interrupting my vacation. That was going to have to be me. And that is a way where I think that I started surprising people a little bit by not making the money my master and by asking for things like a day off a month to go work with a public service organization as a perk that I wanted that would keep me more engaged in the work I was doing. And so I think that in therapy, I also went back to therapy then when it was not working in relationship, right? I found myself perhaps engaged to my career. I did date some beautiful men, wonderful men, people that I would still consider friends. But I had, as I look back now, I always thought they were the ones that weren't committed enough. But what I see was that I didn't know how to grant enough space. I could be anxious and make demands and come across as a little too demanding, if you will. And so over time, I learned to just let people be. And I remember distinctly writing after one breakup that hurt a lot. If anyone isn't into me for whatever reason, no worries, turn 180 degrees and just let it be, you know, and that was helpful. And eventually at 38, I did meet the man who I ended up marrying at 42 and to whom I still remain married. We've been married now, since 2006, so 17 years, and a strong relationship. He too was a graduate of Est and the Landmark Forum. And so I felt like he had a lot of ability to self-reflect and to power himself, and that he would always tell me we can make it through, you know, help me let go of worries. So it was interesting, this little thread of therapy that was there that helped me along and helped me see myself as a unique human being, and that I wasn't the role to which I subscribed, that I was my own self, my own human being. And then coupling that with the service work, right, where I felt like I was really making a contribution, you know, where microcredit became more of a household word, and women could start small businesses with small loans. That's what we advocated for. And who can't feel good about that? I felt like I learned about Congress, right? I learned about how bills come into laws, and how advocacy plays such an important part in policymaking and how things go for the haves and the have-nots. And all of that enriched me, right? So it wasn't one particular thing. It was kind of this way of getting through conflict that something wasn't quite aligned for me. And instead of blaming and the system as though it was going to cater to me, I had to learn to let go of those expectations and find a way to create something for myself. And that's how I did it. Therapy was my support system. I think it helped reparent me. I think it gave me like a sense, even if it didn't like instill me with confidence, if I didn't have the confidence, I knew where that came from and I could talk back to that voice. And I would say that overall, because my husband, when I met him, he was a committed bachelor. And when we did get married, his brother said, "How did you do that? You know, how'd you get this guy to marry you?" And I said, "You should ask him." And he said, "She was persistent, but she gave me space." Mm. And that's something I'd say that I like, you know, that I can align with that still, being somebody who's persistent in what we want or what we want for others, but granting space both to myself and others as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oof. All right. So we got like 13 minutes left. So how did you make the move from law school? Did you have to go back to school to become a therapist?
I did. Yes.
And how did you do that? You were working?
Yes, I did. So, you know, I will say that, you know, ever since I started the practice of law, I always had that doubt as to whether that was really me, whether it was really the best fit for me. And with some great girlfriends, we used to go to the Grand Bay for happy hours on Fridays. And one of my friends would always say, you know, "So how much money do you have to save? You know, like, you know, come on, what's your number? How much do you have to save before you go off and do this thing?" And so, you know, there was kind of this, if I was going to talk about it, there'd be this push to get something done. And I kept extending it, right? And I created a bucket list. And this was something I also did through the Landmark Forum, was if I'm going to be in this role, I'm going to empower myself. So, you know, who can I be? What can I play with? And whether I am that or not, who cares, right? So I said, I want to get on boards. So I started serving on boards of, one was the American Nicaraguan Foundation, one was a legal services organization, and being a contribution both financially and with my smarts, right? And then it was, I wanted to do more trial work. So in that situation, I just would inject myself in if I knew a particular case was more likely to be one to go to trial. And I said, I'm going to do at least one more big trial before I end my career. Right. And it happened that I was in a couple of really big cases, and one of them did go to trial. We were in trial for 6 weeks in North Florida, the big team, at least 10 to 12 on our side and the same on the other. And it was just, you know, so hectic from day to day, that at the end of that, I said, the next time I'm across anything that seems this crazy, I'm going to be in the therapist chair. And that was like in 2013.
Oh.
And I was 50 years old then. well, is that right? Yeah, 50 years old. And the next year I was at a conference and we were declaring, you know, what the year was going to be about. And I'm shouting to the other side of the room, this is the year I changed my career. And it was in the conference was in San Francisco, the Conference for Global Transformation. Yeah. And on my way home, I stopped at California Institute for Integral Studies. And I started picking up literature because they had a psychology program, a master's in counseling, which is called integral counseling. And what I loved about that is that our school was one of the first to incorporate Eastern traditions into Western psychology. So it's a holistic approach, mind, body, spirit, you know, an integrated approach where it's they ask you, the therapist, who are you going to bring to the chair, right? And having you look at the person and the individual from a multicultural perspective, really understanding the uniqueness of people. And that fits so well. So boom, I ended up, I say, don't do it like me, you know, have your own midlife crisis. I warn you not to do it like me, because I did work. I continued to work 3/4 time. And I was able to leave once a month to fly out on a Thursday evening and return on a Monday. And I was in school all day Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 3 years. So I made 63 trips back and forth. And that was how I entered into the transition from attorney to being a therapist. And it was such, even to this day, I'm so thankful because it was not easy. And one of the things I really had to do, and I'm still doing, right, is shedding ego of that identity of the one with, you know, the high six figure salary of the person who can walk in and just say you're an attorney. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a certain level of prestige or listening that you're granted, of the person that could, you know, just have what I wanted without much thought about it. And, you know, really getting that this was going to be about my contributing in life. And that's how I looked at it, as I call this my sunset career. I could do this until the cows come home. You know, you might take me from the chair into the grave, you know, who knows, but it's great. It's like that part of me that loves people. Mm. And yet I, as what I call myself, the integral therapist, that is the name of my company, because I integrate. So as an attorney, as a litigator, I'm used to listening to two sides. I work primarily with couples, right? Oh. And so I'm very familiar with one side thinks they're dead right, and so does the other, right? And yet somehow, you know, we're going to find some sort of resolution to this, or we're going to be stuck in the same old chaotic mess that we're in. And so I found that, and then like my business experience, my financial experience, being able to ask people to follow their stories. I work a lot with busy professionals. I have attorney clients. I have business women and business men who have things that pressure them that aren't just their family, friends, relationships, but their careers and world events and what have you. And so I feel so blessed. And coming to the career as a more senior person, I think has also been beneficial. And it's something I want to tell people who are thinking about life transitions. I work with people through life transitions, is that, you know, I think at our age, I think we're ripe. We are just we're like very enriched, ripe fruit that could probably be placed in most any organization and make a difference. And that's something too that I want to carry on as I approach retirement, being able to have generations to give to younger generations, and to be able to have people, I say, every tool in my toolbox, like I'll whip them all out. I know how to use them. I want you to have access to them as well. And so that's lawyering, work with the growth and development work of Landmark Education, my public service work, which included enrollment, registration, writing, getting news clips and things out there. So I find like in some ways it's been something that was just, it took time to get here, but I feel like I'm in the right place.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, how did you, you went to the school and you said it took you 3 years, and then did you just quit? Like, how did you start getting clients? Like, how did that all work?
That's interesting. So I had to create my own internship here in Florida since I was at a California school. If I had wanted to stay there in California, there were all sorts of, that CIIS has some of the best counseling centers around, but I came back and again through a contact of a Landmark graduate who worked within an organization that focused on trauma. And it was perfect because by this point in time, I had learned Spanish, which we didn't get into, but I did that in my 40s. And I worked at a trauma resolution center where primarily we were working with undocumented immigrants who had been traumatized either through their travels or through loss of family members, et cetera. A lot of domestic violence issues. Sometimes there would be other kinds of situations. So I started there, and then I worked also at a domestic violence shelter, and I worked with children there. And so it was, again, mostly through contacts. And I was also someone who I wrote a kind of a cold call letter, just wrote one to people, and I found one position there. So I had to do whatever it was going to take and talk about shedding ego. Yeah.
So you got a position someplace.
What's interesting, in internship, you do need to have somewhat of a position. You can be a private practice intern. And I started to do that. So even as an intern working for other organizations so I could get supervision and really learn the skill set, I knew that given my age and sort of my desire to be on my own, to have my own solopreneurship, if you will, that I wanted to start my own practice. So during internship, I looked for a place where I could see clients, and I saved my spot. I had to reserve it and to pay to get the space. I had one client for a full year, right? And worked at an agency, and then little by little, where I see clients is that Bayview Therapy. And we cross market together. We have a number of clinicians so that we all have different specialties, which allows us to serve the community in a holistic way. So I had to do all those things that I'm sure that you do too these days in a modern world. Newsletters, your Instagram, LinkedIn, all those accounts. You're doing events like this that give us the opportunity to let people know how we can help them.
Wow. All right. Well, we have 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you've been doing, well, how many years have you been doing this for now?
I can't count. 2018 is when I saw my first clients, right?
Okay, so 5. Wow.
Yeah. And well, so amazing. Now I have been a licensed therapist and I focus on couples primarily, right? And really help them unhook themselves, right? From this cycle of how they can only see one way. And I try to have them in this holistic approach, see the resiliency, see the strengths, try to pull away from being just saturated with problems and remind yourself of where is the love, where was the connection, and can we get that back? I also work with individuals with trauma. And like my big goal when I'm out there in my sunset career is that as part of fun and adventure and serving communities that are underserved, one day I want to do pop-up therapy where I have a mobile van.
Wow.
And who knows, maybe with grants and maybe with some public or some private funding, I would be able to set up a little shop that could come in at special times or special needs and do both legal, find some ways with the community to provide both mental health services and legal services that might be needed in English and in Spanish. That's one thing I have on the back burner.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So do the people who reach out to you have to be in Florida? because we only have like 1 minute left. So.
Yes, I do run a skills group that is open to people outside of Florida, but I primarily focus on individuals from Florida. If you want to reach me, and I'd love for you to do that, I offer a free 15-minute consult. You can reach me at Carla Barrow, CarlaBarrow, at The Integral, INTEGRAL, therapist. Carla Barrow at The Integral Therapist. I welcome meeting with you.
Okay, great. And what would you like to leave? What kind of message would you like to leave for people? Like, what kind of world do you envision? What, you know, how do you want to?
So the thing I'm interested in now and what I'm dedicating myself to is exploring what matters most in our relationships. And when we're not there, when they feel off, learning how to repair. Because I find we need to return to that state of relationship for connection and creativity. So I'm up to people finding how they can create what they want. And when it's in states where it looks like it's going to break up, rather than it having to split or schism, to be able to repair. And I'll leave folks with this, the reminder that my parents were married for 33 years. They divorced. They were apart for about 15, and they spent... My father spent his last 10 years with my mother. We were all together with him, taking care of him in what was then my mother's marital home while he passed away from cancer. And so the value of being able to put aside what you think are the differences and restore yourself like to family or whatever it is that works for you is possible.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, thank you, Carla. This has been wonderful, interesting. You know, I applaud you for everything you've done, for everything you've been through, for where you've gotten, and for now what you're giving back, you know, based on all your experiences. It's amazing. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be able to tell the story. Thank you.
Yes, it's fabulous. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work.
All right.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.